The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, welcome to hour two of the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm playing the role of Eric Metaxas. Go with it. Suspend your disbelief. John Zmirak is playing himself. John, at the end of hour one, you were talking about some really disturbing stuff. Unfortunately, we have to go back there. What you just said, that the folks that trespassed, which to me seems like technical trespassing. Most of these people had no idea they were trespassing. I know people who were in the Capitol on that day, and they told me about it. And these are the sweetest people. I mean, no kidding. These are the kindest, sweetest people, people of deep faith. They were just wandering around, thrilled to be where they were. They weren't part of any anything coming near to the idea of insurrection. They're being demonized. They're being arrested, investigated by the FBI. I know some of these people. You're telling me, you've told my audience, that Julie Kelly wrote an article at American Greatness saying that in order to get out of 23-hour solitary confinement lockdown, the public defenders of these poor people are saying that they will read books on critical race theory and all of this nonsense. I simply can't believe that in America this is happening. I cannot, John, I can hardly believe it.
Eric, it's worse than that. They're being subjected to denazification. They're being given books about the Holocaust as if they were neo-Nazis or Holocaust deniers. With the left has a very clear message. The message is, if you disagree with us, you're a racist. A racist is the same as a Nazi, so you are a Nazi, and we get to punch you, we get to take away your bank account, as happened to Lauren Witzka, who had run for Congress for the Republicans in Delaware. Wells Fargo just took away her bank account because it didn't like her politics. There are people who are not being allowed on airplanes because of their political views. Airlines are simply saying, no, you are on a no-fly list, a political no-fly list. When we talk about tyranny, when we talk about the left being totalitarian and following Marxist rather than Christian or American morality, this is what it means. And if you don't draw a line in the sand here and say, no, you can't forcibly re-educate Americans for engaging in nonviolent political protests and keep them locked up in solitary confinement and conduct political show trials, if we won't fight over this, and if Republicans won't lead over this, if Donald Trump won't lead over this, then we already have a one-party state. We have a single anti-racist party. It's the called anti-racist party. It's the only legal party. And if you want to not have another one, people will say, well, why do you want to have a racist party? It's exactly the way things were in East Germany. They are imposing an Eastern European-style Marxist coup d'etat on the American people, and so many cowards on the right are complicit in it. And when I saw those pants-wetting so-called conservatives denouncing the January 6th people as if they were criminals
Elaine
or terrorists.
Elaine Chao, who was in the president's cabinet, she did her show trial thing. Unfortunately, the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, came out. A number of people that, you know, are at least Republicans and at least somehow loyal to the president at whose pleasure they served spoke out. But many others did. My question today is, where are the good guys? Where is Ted Cruz? Is he speaking about this? There are a number of people that I think of as heroic. Maybe they're not perfect, but they're the good guys. Where are they?
I think Ron DeSantis has spoken out about this. Ted Cruz has spoken out about it. I'm not sure. I think probably Josh Hawley. The people who actually were themselves attacked. I mean, they're still trying to disbar Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, and they just disbarred Rudy Giuliani for questioning election results. Now, every time a Republican wins, there are some Democrats in Congress who try not to certify the electors. It happens every time. It's almost a ritual. But when Republicans do it based on real evidence, total panic, total lockdown. Now, that tells you something. There is absolutely no problem with the 2020 election, obviously. And in fact, that's so obvious that we have to destroy the lives of anyone who raises any questions. And we can't look at the ballots. We can't look at the signatures. It's really, really important. The truth, Eric, is so fragile. It's a little tiny one trimester embryo, and it's so fragile. You have to protect it with a bodyguard of snitches and secret police and thugs and social media monopoly.
They are the amniotic fluid, so to speak.
Yeah, of this antichrist they want to bring to birth that slouches towards Capitol Hill to be born.
Ouch. John, you know, I think most Americans who live their lives, they just don't want to hear this stuff because it's too horrifying. And they just think if I ignore it, it'll go away. I get that. I get that, how people don't want to hear John Zmirak talk about this because it's just too disturbing. I'd rather believe he's exaggerating. He's biased. Maybe there's some truth to it. But the people in leadership, the senators, Donald Trump, Mike Pence, for that matter, anybody who believes in America, you don't have to agree with everyone on everything. But if you believe in America, you have to understand this is a travesty. And I'll say this. I believe if they continue to push this kind of stuff, it's going to get ugly. There are going to be bad actors who are going to get violent. In other words, at some point, if you continue to do this thing, you're going to cause the kind of trouble you're pretending has already happened. And that's what I worry about.
You're going to justify the kind of revolution you're talking about. Joe Biden is threatening citizens with nuclear weapons and F-15s as a way of mocking the Second Amendment. He said, these people say that private citizens having firearms is a safeguard of freedom. Well, that is what the American founders, every last one of them, said in the ratification debates of the Bill of Rights. These people are saying that, well, you're going to need F-15s and nukes if you want to fight us. To which the best response on Twitter, someone just posted a picture of a smiling Viet Cong soldier. They could have also posted a member of the Taliban. Because no, the U.S. Army cannot pacify Afghanistan. It couldn't pacify Iraq. It couldn't pacify Vietnam. It certainly couldn't pacify America if they were trying to tyrannize America, especially since they're stuffing the army with trannies and Karens and, you know, rejects from the vocational school. The people who want to sign up for the army, they're labeling as extremists. An army training manual explicitly says, as part of counter-extremist training, that likely extremists include evangelical Christians and conservative Orthodox Catholics. In other words, 90% of the kind of people who will sign up for the army are potential extremists. So if they fill up the army with crossing guards and Bruce Jenner wannabes, and they're going to really pacify America in block-by-block fighting, well, the F-15s are going to be flying overhead with no targets.
I was going to say there's not enough tanks and planes to crush, you know, 300 million Americans. It doesn't work that way. We're not a police state.
I don't put it past them nuking us, actually. Then America, if they started nuking cities because they vote Republican, maybe we can finally achieve the Democrat utopia and America can be an irradiated, empty wasteland.
But of course,
which is,
the cities,
I think, the Democrat
don't
platform.
Vote Republican. That's the problem, is that the true conservatives and patriots tend to be much more scattered. We're going to go to a break. Before we go to break, I just want to remind my audience, folks, again, I say this, please go to stream.org and print out John's articles and distribute them in your home school cohort or whatever ugly word we use. Distribute these things on social media. I say the same thing. My friend Keith Junta has some stuff out at thewinepatch.org. Very important we do that. And don't forget Nutramedics.com, 20% off if you use the code Eric. We'll be right back. From Boston to Denver and every town in between.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their three-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey there, friends. Eric Metaxas here. Joe Biden and the Democrats have laid out the most socialist agenda our country has ever seen. Instead of following President Trump's blueprint that had the economy booming, the Dems are going to raise taxes, increase regulations, and skyrocket an already outrageous national debt. If your retirement is in traditional investments, it is in jeopardy. Americans should be diversifying their investments with gold and precious metals. Gold gives you control over your wealth and protects you from market volatility, inflation, and a weakening dollar. When investing in gold, I turn to Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals has over 40 years of experience in helping Americans protect their finances, and this team is prepared to patiently consider your own personal financial needs. If you're looking to invest in gold, call the good folks at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-473-6204 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Don't leave your retirement to chance, friends. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. That's 866-473-6204. Our love is alive, and so we begin.
Foolishly laying our hearts on the table, stumbling in. Hey there, friends. I'm talking to John Zmirak. John, what's next? Do you have any good news for the group today?
Good news? I'm not about good news,
okay.
Eric. I'm
all right.
About,
well, what else? No, what other kind of news do you
I
have?
I do have good news. I do have good news. Okay. A great book that I can recommend to people that they should read alongside your book if you can keep it.
Great? Wow.
Tell me more. It's by Mark David Hall, who I befriended on Twitter before Twitter decided that I was a dangerous criminal unperson and banned me for life. Mark David Hall's book, Did America Have a Christian Founding?
We had him right on this now, program to discuss that. It's a while ago, but talk about that. You wrote about it at stream.org. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have an article about that at the stream, which we ran for the 4th of July. Right today, the myth is that America was founded by a bunch of deists who believe that maybe there's a God, but he's infinitely distant and he doesn't have anything to do with the world. He's like Homer Simpson asleep at the controls of the nuclear reactor. And occasionally maybe a light goes off, but he's sleeping. I think that's wishful thinking for a lot of people. But anyway, their belief is that America was founded by people who believe in that. It was set up that way. And we have this absolute separation of church and state that you're not allowed to even vote in the privacy of the voting booth. You can't even vote based on anything to do with your religious convictions. That is just a lie. It is an absolute conscious lie that left-wing secular scholars, especially at the ACLU, which remember was originally linked with the Communist Party, that was a secular lie that leftist historians and secularist historians started to promulgate in the 1940s. By the 1960s, U.S. courts were ruling as if this were true. But in fact, it is not true, not any of it. Do you know how many deists there were among the founding fathers, real deists? One.
And who was that?
Thomas Paine.
Paine. Thomas Paine is often called an atheist. He was very, later in life, he became very anti-clerical along the lines of the French revolutionaries. But earlier, because I was reading a quote of his from Common Sense or the other pamphlet. He clearly believed in God. But yes, Thomas Paine
Eric, he was lying. Thomas Paine was a deist who wrote as if he were not one. He was in the closet. He was a closeted deist. He talked about divine providence. He talked about prayer and fasting. That was just rhetoric. By that point, he was already a deist. So Thomas Paine was a dishonest deist. Ethan Allen was a non-believer. Every other founding father was a Christian of some variety. Now, Thomas Jefferson was a mixed bag. On the one hand, he would sound like a deist sometimes, but then he would talk about prayer and fasting and divine providence. Those are not deist doctrines. You're not a deist if you believe in divine providence.
Ditto with Ben Franklin.
With Ben Franklin, too. George Washington was a church-going Episcopalian.
Back before the Episcopalians became what they have become.
Right. Charles Carroll was a Catholic, but 90% of the founding fathers were what we would call today Reformed, hardcore Calvinists. And they believed in the fallenness of man, and they set up the government with that in mind. Now, I'm a Catholic with not much sympathy for Calvin, but Calvinists seem to understand how America works because they're the ones who designed it. They had a very pessimistic view of human nature, which meant you don't want people in the government, fallen, corrupt human beings, having too much power. You need to set them up in these Rube Goldberg things like the separation of powers and the localism of the states. You needed to make it as hard as possible for people to act like King George III or far worse. There were far worse people than King George III. There was Louis XIV who hunted Protestants down. Louis XV, who took Protestant kids away from their parents to be raised by Catholics away from their family.
Like they're doing in Germany and Scandinavia today.
That's right. There have been plenty of tyrants in the history, even of the West, much less if we look at like Central Asia and Genghis Khan or the Chinese Empire or the Muslim world. Tyranny has been the norm. Tyranny justified by false appeals to religion has been the norm for human history. Our country was a glorious, noble experiment in liberty, but it was grounded in a skepticism about centralized power in the hands of anyone. And now we have a president, Joe Biden, his Bidenist occupational government, promising to send people door to door, demanding that we take the dead baby vaccine. The president of the United States is going to personally intervene in the medical decisions of every American. This is the kind of tyranny our founders wanted us to be armed so we could overthrow it if it was absolutely necessary. If they're going to steal elections and censor the press and keep people from flying on airplanes or having bank accounts, if they even question the election, if this is not the onset of the kind of tyranny our founders warned against, what would be, folks? You tell me at what point it starts to be tyranny.
Right.
When you have the election that's faked, the media lies about it, and you get in trouble if you question it. How much worse can it get? Are we actually going to have to wear little stars that proclaim our religion before you realize these people are like the Nazis?
Well, look, this is the thing. Everywhere I go now, people ask me to talk on Bonhoeffer. So my Bonhoeffer book is selling more than my other books because unintentionally, when I wrote that book, I was writing the game plan for where we are currently going. What happened when Hitler came to power in early 33, with lightning speed, they did all kinds of things that people weren't really ready for it. They weren't prepared to push back. And stunning changes happened. And of course, when Hindenburg wheezed his last, then now it's, you know, Katie, bar the door. We are going to just push forward. People in this country, similarly, we are not prepared. It's hard to take in when you say these things. I mean, I know, unfortunately, you're exactly correct, but it's still hard for me to process no, this is really happening now. And so we need to warn our fellow Americans, folks, gird your loins, get ready, stand up, speak. If you don't do that now, you'll be sorry. It's happened to many people in the past where they said, let's just wait till tomorrow. I don't know. I just want to go with the program, go along with the flow, go with the flow. This is not the time to do that.
Let me point out, Kamala Harris is even more dangerous than Biden. He is Hindenburg, but he is the senile old man who is the last face of some kind of ordinary connection with our respectable past. And the foaming at the mouth fanatic is who's waiting in the wings. It's not Adolf Hitler, it's Kamala Harris, who, as Attorney General of California, tried to imprison journalists for daring to investigate Planned Parenthood's violation of federal law,
but wait,
selling baby organs
John,
for profit.
She wears high tops and jokes about smoking weed. She can't be that mean, can she?
Yeah, she dressed up in lederhosen and was very fond of her dog Blondie. I think that would be a very humanizing detail too.
I mean, that's the point, is that you're telling us facts. And again, I forgive me for interrupting, but it's hard to believe this stuff. It's hard to face these facts that's what Kamala Harris, you know, cackling, smiling, that she did this with the tremendous power that she had while in California.
It's still happening. I had, when I guest hosted for you a few years back, I had David DeLeiden on as a guest. He is still trying to stay out of a California state prison. And right now, the state of California is trying to stop him from calling defense witnesses. I wrote a piece about this 2 weeks ago. Guys, I get that we're going to have Stalinist purge trials. I get that abortion is so sacred, that selling baby organs for profit, we have to protect that too. And we have to persecute the journalists. But if we're going to have Stalinist purge trials in service of big abortion, could you just make them a little more plausible, please? Just for old time's sake, can the Stalinist purge trials in America that put people in solitary confinement, can they just be a little more plausible so that we don't have to be so embarrassed showing our face to people from free countries like Denmark?
I'm afraid we're out of time, my friend, John. It's always good to talk to you. Folks, please go to stream.org, check out these articles. When we come back, we'll be talking about something slightly more positive, but that could be just anything anyway, because this is so depressing. But we need to face the facts. Also, folks, please go to Nutramedics.com. Use the code Eric. We'll be back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm playing the role of Eric Metaxas. We're at the NRB. Not that you care, but at the NRB, I just bump into tons of amazing people, friends, former friends. And I got to tell you, I'm sitting here with somebody that's been on this show many, many times to talk about a new project. Tim Mahoney, welcome.
Well, thank you, Eric. Good to be here.
Now, tell people, how do they know you from, you know, Patterns of, to talk a little bit about that.
Well, you and I met because of Patterns of Evidence.
Yes.
I made this film called Patterns of Evidence, The Exodus, and that was the first coming out in 2015. It only took me 12 years to make that
film. Well, I met you early on.
Yeah.
And what town are you in again?
What?
What town are you in?
Minneapolis.
I was in your town and you dragged me to your studio and we talked.
Yeah.
So it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
But so people know you from Patterns of Evidence. You've done a number of films on the Exodus, proving the Exodus, and a lot of people would know you from that. But you have a new project, and you just told me about it yesterday. I said, we got to get you on. It's called The Seven Churches of Revelation, Times of Fire. What is this project?
Well, this project is a fantastic project. It's coming out of France. Christophe Hanover is a French filmmaker.
Can anything good come out of France?
That's the question that I asked, too. Of all places. But God has chosen this young man. He's an evangelical Christian, and he has made this film, Times of Fire. And it's about not, you know, who is the Antichrist or what's the mark of the beast, but he sort of...
Because we all know it's Henry Kissinger. Go ahead.
So what he ended up doing was he went to the very location, went to Island of Patmos, and then he went to the seven churches, the locations, and looked at the archaeology.
Okay, so the seven churches refer to, because a lot of people listening to this program are not biblically literate, so I want to be clear. In the final book of the Bible, the Revelation, the Apocalypse of St. John, he talks about the seven churches. And those seven churches are the churches in existence at the end of the first century in Asia Minor.
Which is modern-day Turkey today.
Which is modern-day Turkey. So there's the Church of Thyatira and the Church of Pergamon and the Church of... So there are seven churches referred to. So this filmmaker, why did he go to these places?
I think he felt that this was something God was calling him to do, to make an investigative film.
So he's about a Christian and a filmmaker.
He is. He's an evangelical Christian.
In France.
In France.
I don't believe it. I'm going to need to see some evidence.
You need some ID, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, you're going to get to see him because today we're going to be actually showing some scenes from the film.
Yeah.
But this film is about the message that Christ gave to those seven churches. And I think that's why I was attracted to it, because what was it like at that time to be an authentic Christian? And I think that's a question that we need to ask ourselves today. So this is an investigation, not only in archaeology,
right,
but it's an investigation into our own hearts.
So the film director, the Frenchman, is Etienne Magny.
Did I
pronounce that semi-correctly?
Well, you added some French to it.
How do you say it?
I just say Etienne. I never call him by his last name.
Magnin. That's the Minnesota Magnin version.
Yes.
Can you give us the real version?
Yes.
How do you say the last name?
Etienne Magnin, and he is Magnin? The director.
Etienne Magnin.
Yes.
Doesn't sound too French.
And
Etienne Magnin. So anyway, he directed the film.
Yep.
And this is not, normally you do archaeological stuff, so this is not that.
It is.
Oh, it is. Tell us how it is.
Well,
go ahead.
It is because you see this is an archaeological poster. You see that thing?
That's yeah, a, he's that's standing a on, look, on a broken column, on
yes,
a ruin.
He is. So he's going to the actual, he goes to the actual cave where they believe that John wrote this letter.
Okay, so let me just say again, the title of the film is?
Times of Fire.
Okay, Times of Fire. The subtitle is The Seven Churches of Revelation. Times of Fire. So he goes to the cave on the Greek island of Patmos where John, who was the beloved disciple, when he was exiled to Patmos. So
right.
He was the only one of the 12 disciples who was not killed. And so he survives to great age. He's in his 90s. And while he's on the Isle of Patmos exiled, he gets the vision, which he writes down, which we know of as the Book of Revelation. So you're telling me that this filmmaker knows where that cave is? I mean, I guess many people say that this is the cave.
Right.
But what is your sense of it?
Well, as they're putting it together, there's a tradition there. I mean, this became very well known. So there's an awful lot to this that was important to the people at that time. Your relatives, right, in Greece?
My Greek relatives.
Yeah.
They're there now. We can call them.
Yes. Well, anyway, this was a very important place that the church fathers kept memory of. And so,
actually, you know what? This is important to say. We forget that if you were alive then
mm-hmm.
and you knew John and you knew that John knew Jesus, you would revere these people. You would hang on their every word. And if they received a vision in a cave, there is just no question that that wouldn't be forgotten.
Right.
There's no way. I really do believe a lot of these ancient sites are completely accurate. So this is Patmos. Were you able to go there?
I haven't been there yet. No, I've been in Egypt and Israel and Jordan and
You're
Saudi
kind of busy,
Arabia.
Tim.
But I'm on the other side of the Bible. So I've been starting in the Exodus and working my way, and he's in Revelation. And so this is a trilogy of
films. And you're going to work your way
to
the middle,
yes.
Like those two dogs in the Disney film with the spaghetti?
Yes, exactly. We're going to work our way towards the middle. But I think what's happening is that there's an arc of God's hand in history. And God is telling us that there's a beginning of time, and there's going to be coming an end of time as we know it.
Right.
And so these films that I'm making, in some ways, they're prophetic. But this is a very practical film. Because it's asking the question, Eric, about what does it mean to be an authentic Christian? What did that early church look like? And what was happening was Caesar was in control, and he was saying to those Christians, worship me. And they were saying, we worship a higher God. And that's why this Times of Fire, I think, is important for people today. It's a very important people because I think God is calling us now.
Are you saying I shouldn't worship the state? What's wrong with you?
Yes.
Can't you be a good citizen? We're going to be right back talking to Tim Mahoney. The film is Times of Fire. Folks, I'm at the NRB. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm with Tim Mahoney, the filmmaker. And the new film is called Times of Fire, The Seven Churches of Revelation. So you said that this French filmmaker goes to these seven churches, but he starts out where the vision came from in the cave at Patmos.
Yes. Yep.
And so what is the film about? Tell us more about that.
This is actually a trilogy of films. This is the first, covering the first part of the vision, and it's going to be his journey, Christoph Hanover's journey to the first three churches.
Who's Christoph?
Christoph is the man in the film. He's the man who.
Oh, so there's like a narrative within the film,
right?
And it's like Lee Strobel.
Yes,
there's like a guy on a
search.
He's on a
search for his
faith.
So
he has that kind of a narrative.
He's asking the question, okay, what can I learn from this important message? You know, a lot of people today are wondering, are we living in the last days? And the question is, how do I prepare? But what this message is telling us is, how do I prepare my heart? How do I prepare my heart for the return of Christ? That's why I think this is such an important and universal message. And in October 11th and 12th, we're going to have a nationwide theatrical event, and then we're going to have a worldwide release on digital. And we're trying to gather together and rally people who are realizing that we need to turn our hearts back to Christ.
Well, there's no question about that, and however we need to do that. But in this film, does he come out and say that Joe Biden is Nero?
No, he doesn't come
out.
Or
Caligula? Which one is it? Nero or Caligula? We need an answer.
Yeah. Well, we don't have an answer for that in this film, but we do have an answer for where did this happen in history? And you know what's interesting is that places are important. That's why if you ever go to the Holy Land and you're in very special places, well, the places we're going to visit are very special because God chose those times and places to reveal a message to that early church. And that's what this film is going to communicate. And not only that, Eric, I think that people are going to be asking the question. They're going to investigate their own heart. What's the message? What are the warnings and what are the admonitions that I need to take on? Am I prepared for the return of Christ?
Well, it is interesting when we talk about the importance of place. The Catholics get this. They understand that relics are important. Places are important. Usually, the more Protestant you are, I mean, for example, the Dutch Reformed believe that Holland, Michigan is a sacred place. They happen to be wrong about that. But it's kind of interesting because I do think a lot of people have a very cerebral Enlightenment view of Scripture, which is wrong, and the mystery of certain things and the sanctity of place, that these are things that most people get that, but I think sometimes we can reason ourselves away from it. But there is no question that if you go to the very cave where Jesus was born, or you go to the cave where John received revelation, these places are holy, and we can't really explain that exactly, but it is important. So the fact that he goes to these seven churches and these seven spots, I'm thrilled that he did that through film. Most of us, can't get to these places, but in the film Times of Fire, we can visit them because most of us wonder what's there now.
Well, you know, my films, Patterns of Evidence, cover questions about the historical credibility of the Bible. And what I've been able to do is that when we see that God has acted in history, in time and space, that there's a time when God revealed himself at a burning bush, there's a time when he parted the sea, there's a time when the walls of Jericho fell down, and we can see the physical evidence for that. Now what we're showing in...
For Jericho? Or for the parting of the... We can't see the evidence for the parting of the sea, can we?
Well, you have to see the Red Sea Miracle Parts 1 and 2.
Well, we have to...
Patterns of Evidence. It's up for an award here.
Patterns of Evidence, Red Sea Miracles Parts 1 and 2. Are there any parts I don't...
Well, I haven't gotten to Part 3 yet,
okay.
So...
But in a nutshell, just because I can't not ask this... What is the most direct evidence you would say for something like the parting of the Red Sea? Is it kind of complicated, or is it we found, chariots?
I think my takeaway after almost 20 years working on that is the fact that the question of what is impossible for God? Does God need to work in natural things, such as natural wind blowing, or can he do supernatural things? And when you look and step back and look at the universe... I think that he's capable of very supernatural things.
But we know that he created the universe literally out of nothing. That's pretty supernatural.
Right, right. But I'm not here to talk about patterns of evidence. I'm here to talk about the times of fire.
Times of fire.
Can I say one more
coming
thing?
Coming out soon. Yes. Times of fire. Look it up.
Why is that name? Why is that title? It's because the church throughout history has gone through times of fire. There are two kinds of fire. There's
but nothing as bad as the fake Biden administration. Let's be honest. This is end time stuff.
Times of fire, it can be persecution, and it can be. And right now, there's a time of fire that many Christians are going through, a persecution. And the question is what does the future look like, even in our own country and the Western world? Are we going to be heading into forms of persecution as we stand up? But there's another fire, and that's the time of the fire of the Holy Spirit. And that fire was so powerful that it was more powerful to the believers, the fire within them. And so I ask the question, do we have a little pilot flame burning, or do we have a fire, a flame burning? And that's what this film is about. That's what this series is about, is there a passion, or are you lukewarm? I mean, you can't get warm on a pilot light.
Would the people at Dallas Theological Seminary approve of this fiery Holy Spirit stuff? I think it's a little frightening.
Well, I think that this is a call back to Christ. And that's why I think that this film is not about who is the Antichrist or what is the mark of the beast. It's about are our hearts prepared for Christ's return? Whether it happens today or in a week, I think we're asking the question, are we going to be able to endure whatever comes, like the authentic Christianity of the first century?
Is getting the vaccine the mark of the beast?
I don't know.
I wish you would say probably not, but I think the most important thing we've learned is that Biden is Nero. He's a latter-day Nero, just as Saddam Hussein was a latter-day Sennacherib. The pieces are falling into place. Times of Fire, the Seven Churches of Revelation, Tim Mahoney. You didn't direct this. You normally direct films, but are you producing this? You're distributing it?
I'm the worldwide distributor in English. Thinking Man Films is taking on that new role. And so we're excited. Once again, October 11th and 12th is the time.
October 12th is my 25th wedding anniversary, and I probably got nothing going on that day. So Suzanne and I will be watching this film. What else would we do with ourselves? We just love having you, Tim Mahoney. Thank you. I hope folks will look it up. Times of Fire and Patterns of Evidence. Tim Mahoney, thank you.
Thank you.
God bless you, man. Whoa, Albin, it's just about the end of the show, but we've got some very exciting things before people go.
I know.
And it's got nothing to do with Nutramedics.com. Use the code Eric. Nothing to do with Nutramedics.com. Use the code Eric. Or mystore.com, mypillow.com. Use the code Eric. Nothing to do with that. No. I will not mention those things on this program today.
Not at
Here's
all.
What I will mention.
Please.
There's a couple of people sailing around the world. I won't mention their names.
Don't.
But Brown and Eileen Council.
Really?
Those are their initials. They're in the studio making me nervous. Very old friends freaking me out by sitting here. I have no problem talking to an imaginary audience, folks. That's how I think of you. You're out there someplace. But when it's actual people that I know, it kind of freaks me out. I just want you to know that.
Yeah.
All right. So let me say this. Last night, I watched The Sons of Katie Elder, the movie with John Wayne.
Yeah.
People want to know, hey, Eric, what do you do in your sport? What do you do for fun? I collapse, I eat a meal, and sometimes I'll watch, you know, TV. But what has TV become? Finally, as I knew it would, TV and streaming and everything has morphed into one thing. So do I flip around? Rarely, unless Turner Classic Movies is my go-to thing. But if they don't have something on, you know, I'll see what I can find on Netflix or Amazon.
We go to BritBox.
We go to BritBox.
Yeah.
And we were watching Cranston. Yeah. It's with Eileen. Who's the woman that I'm confusing with our guest in the studio? It's the British actress. Is it Eileen Atkins? Eileen Atkins, Judy Dench.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, they're in this thing, and I'm watching. It's entertaining, but you know it's skewed
for a female audience.
Uh-huh.
So I felt a little self-conscious.
Oh, there you go.
And after two episodes, I said, I can't do this anymore. Okay. I need to watch like a Western or something. So Suzanne and I found...
Get that testosterone
So
going.
Suzanne and I found The Sons of Katie Elder, 1965, Dean Martin, John Wayne. And it's not a great movie, but it's a very good movie. But there are a couple of lines in it. First of all, I always read the opening credits, who's going to be in it. And there were a couple of names. What's his name? Kennedy, who always plays the bad guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. George Kennedy.
George Kennedy plays the bad guy. Man, is he just like a wicked monster. He's the bad guy. But there are all of these other character actors whose names I don't know. But then I noticed in the credits, Strother Martin.
Yeah.
Strother Martin is in all these. I can't even think, whatever. But there's a scene in the movie. There were a couple of lines in the movie, and I thought the movie was worth it to me for these like three lines. One of them was John Wayne is kind of arguing with Dean Martin about when they were kids, and he used to always throw me out of the hayloft and whatever. And John Wayne says, that's because I can't remember the exact line, but he says, you always throw me out of the hayloft, and he says, that's just because you bounced so good. Now, most people will think that's not funny. I find it funny. And we just want to see you bounce. You know, it was just so stupid.
By the way, your John Wayne is
freaking people out.
Great,
people listening on the radio, they think the Duke walked in here.
They think.
But then there was another one. Another one was referring to their mother, Katie Elder, and it said she had more brass than a Kansas City fire engine. I said, that's a keeper. I want to remember that line. Anyway, then there's a scene with Dean Martin where he's faking. He's a gambler and a con man, and he's trying to fool people. This is with Strother Martin. He's trying to fool people that he has a glass eye, and he's raffling it off, and he puts on an eye patch. So later on, he wins it back, and they say, well, we want to see you put it back in. And then the big reveal, he takes off the eye patch, and he says, I don't think I can do that because it'd be awful crowded in there. And I just thought, that's a brilliant way of putting it.
Yes.
But anyway, Sons of Katie Elder, we love to watch these movies. I want to remind people before we leave you for the day, in all seriousness, go to thewinepatch.org, thewinepatch.org. My friend Keith Junta, one of my dearest friends on the planet, does a lot of amazing writing, but he wrote about my experience at the Sean Foyt event the other day in the Bronx. Check it out, thewinepatch.org. We'll see you tomorrow.